Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will discuss the science and practice of naturopathic medicine, the healthcare specialty of natural medicine. We will talk with Dr. Paul Mittman, ND, the president of the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine and Health Sciences. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, cutting fat keeps you slim. A review of 33 trials involving 73,589 men, women, and children in America, Europe, and New Zealand found that choosing low-fat foods helped people lose around 3.5 pounds, slim their waistlines, and cut bad cholesterol, all without dieting. Researchers who led the study said that the results prove that for the first time that people can lose weight without trying to. The weight reduction when people ate less fat was remarkably consistent, and we saw it in every trial. Those who cut down more on fat lost more weight, said Lee Hooper from the University of East Anglia Medical School, who led the study. What surprised us was that they did lose weight, their BMI, or body mass index, decreased, and their waists became slimmer, Hooper said. The lower fat eaters also kept their weights down over at least 7-year period of time. The review, which was commissioned by the World Health Organization's Nutrition Guidance Expert Advisory Group after a request to update their guidelines on fat intake, will now form a crucial part of the global recommendations, the researchers said. Being overweight or obese increases the risk of many illnesses such as cancer, heart disease, and stroke. Together, strokes, heart attacks, and other cardiovascular diseases are the biggest killers worldwide and claim more than 17 million lives a year, according to the World Health Organization. The results were published in the British Medical Journal, and they showed that eating less fat reduces body weight, cuts BMI, and reduces waist circumference. Well, fast food is related to stroke risk. If you already view fast food restaurants as a blight upon the urban landscape, consider that each one you see in your neighborhood could be raising your risk of stroke by 1%. If you live surrounded by them, your stroke risk might be 13% higher than if you lived where there were fewer fast food restaurants in your community. Those are the implications of a University of Michigan study which compared the number of strokes occurrence over a 3-year period of time in one Texas community where its neighborhood was concentrated with fast food outlets. Now, we don't know whether fast food actually increases the risk because of its contents or whether fast food restaurants are a marker of unhealthy neighborhoods. But what we do know is that the factors like fat consumption, alcoholic beverages, low fruit and vegetable intake, and a sedentary lifestyle all contribute to higher stroke risk. Strokes are the number 3 killer in the country after heart disease and cancer. Each year, about 780,000 Americans suffer from strokes, 150,000 of whom will die from them, and avoiding fast food would seem a good place to start in minimizing your risk, especially as it poses so many other health threats to kids as well as adults. New Zealand researchers found that 75% of kids who eat even one burger a week are 100% more likely to experience wheezing and asthmatic symptoms. Children who eat fast food daily are far more likely to suffer from recurrent abdominal pain, and French fries could increase your daughter's future risk of breast cancer. We'll be back right after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And our question for today is, why are fried foods bad? Well, fried foods definitely have their drawbacks. They are high in calories and fat, often unhealthy saturated and trans fats. And when oils are heated at high temperatures, these fats break down to forming a variety of really unhealthy compounds, especially when the oil is reused over long periods of time. Fried foods absorb these compounds. Now, this is a concern because lab and animal studies have shown that some breakdown products found in fried foods may damage DNA and proteins in cells, they may harm blood vessels, and oxidize the LDL or bad cholesterol, among other adverse effects. Fried foods have the potential of increasing the risk of several diseases, as well as promotes premature aging starting at the cellular level.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Today we are talking about the science and practice of naturopathic medicine, the healthcare specialty that deals with using natural methods in the prevention, treatment, and reversal of disease. Our featured guest today is Dr. Paul Mittman, ND. ND stands for Doctor of Naturopathic Medicine. And Dr. Mittman is a naturopathic physician and is president of a very unique college called the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine and Health Sciences, located in Tempe, Arizona. At this college, the education and training of students is to become future doctors of naturopathic medicine. Much like a medical school, however, these naturopathic physicians are healthcare specialists using natural methods for health and healing. Well, Dr. Mittman, thank you so much for being with us today on Health and Longevity.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Westerdahl. I am pleased to be here.
Well, first of all, for those people that may not be familiar with naturopathic medicine or they may have heard about it, could you briefly describe what naturopathic medicine is and how it really differs from traditional medical degrees?
Sure. Well, picture a doctor who on the one hand has a Western scientific understanding of health and disease, who could do physical exams, order lab work, take a history, etc., but focuses first on prevention, on understanding the underlying causes of disease, particularly nutritional causes, stress, and lifestyle factors, and then is able to be a bridge for patients offering the best of both worlds, either the best of natural therapies or working in conjunction with conventional medicine to give patients, if they need drugs or surgery, whatever is really appropriate for the patient at that moment in time.
Now, how does the curriculum between naturopathic medicine differ from a person going to become a medical doctor?
Well, it's a four-year program. It's a doctoral program. So I'm going to start out with the similarities first.
Okay.
First of all, it's a four-year doctoral program, number one. Number two, you need a bachelor's degree to get in.
Okay.
The first 2 years are in many ways much more similar than they are different, in that our students are taking anatomy, physiology, biochemistry, microbiology, et cetera, all the basic sciences to understand, well, how does the human body work in health and what goes wrong when a person is suffering from disease? What's different is that the therapies that we teach here, while we do include pharmacology and minor surgery, and we're, capable of referring patients and co-managing patients, really the bulk of the therapies that we teach here fall into that category that you described as natural therapies: nutrition, botanical medicine, hydrotherapy, acupuncture, manipulative therapy, mind-body medicine, and homeopathy.
And let me ask you, how many states in the United States right now license naturopathic physicians?
There are currently 17 states that license naturopathic physicians, plus District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands.
Now, when and how did you get into the field of naturopathic medicine?
You know, it's an interesting story, Dr. Westerdahl. I was out of college, and a cousin of mine, a first cousin, were living in Boulder, Colorado. At the time, I was a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. I rode a bicycle, did not own a car. And my cousin took a class by a naturopath. And he said, you know, Paul, I think you would really like this. And I'd never thought of actually going into medicine, but I felt very strongly about health and maintaining a healthy lifestyle. And I was really committed to a lot of volunteer work and working with people and helping people. I just never thought that the two could come together. As it turns out, my cousin ended up opening a search firm, you know, one of those executive search firms. That most, they're usually called headhunters.
Yes.
And so I considered myself one of his first clients. He told me about this particular doctor. I took the class from her and then ended up going to naturopathic school 2 years later.
Okay, and then when you graduated, you set up practice somewhere? Or?
Well, when I graduated, I went to National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
I did a residency afterwards, and then I did research for about 4 years. In fact, I published the very first study, published in a peer-reviewed journal by a naturopathic doctor. I did the, I think to this day, it's one of the only studies on this subject, on stinging nettles in the treatment of hay fever.
Oh.
So practice, after working in the research department, I got married. My wife and I are both from the East Coast, and we thought it'd be a good idea to move back east and be near our families. And so practiced in Connecticut for the next 7 years. And then after that, we at some point looked at each other, probably midwinter, and said, you know, I think we like summer better than winter. Why have we always lived somewhere cold? And the opportunity to come and teach at Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine came up, and we moved here in 1997.
And you started out as a professor there?
Yeah, I was the chair of the homeopathy department, which to this day I have a special fondness for homeopathy. Although I would say in the context of naturopathic medicine, even with homeopathy, the most important thing that people can do or patients can do is to change the way they live their lives. In other words, mm-hmm. what they eat, whether they exercise, and how they deal with stress. And I think that, you know, that those three factors are at the root of the overwhelming majority of chronic diseases that
right.
we're dealing with today.
Right. Well, you know, you're aware of that today that we are in a major healthcare crisis as far as the way medicine is practiced in the United States, the high costs of medicine, actually, unfortunately, Americans are not the healthiest nation in the country, despite all the advanced technologies we have. And now there's the Affordable Care Act that's going into law. What role do you see naturopathic medicine playing to improve the public's health?
That's a great question because, you know, the Affordable Care Act is going to introduce another 30 million Americans into the healthcare system or reimburse, you know, or cover services mm-hmm. for another 30 million Americans. And if we just do what we have been doing to another 30 million people, first of all, it's going to bankrupt our country.
Right.
And second of all, we're not necessarily going to get a whole lot healthier. And so I think as far as naturopathic medicine is concerned, I think focusing on the root causes of chronic diseases and actually preventing illness is really one of the greatest contributions that my profession can bring to our country. You know, and if you look at the top four leading causes of death in the United States, heart disease, cancer, stroke, and diabetes, all of them overwhelmingly are diseases of lifestyle. And, you know, if we do not step up to the plate to help people make changes in the way they live, then, you know, we're just going to continue down the path that we're already on.
Tell me about, I know you're very interested in the power of a plant-based diet in health and healing. Can you elaborate on some of your personal experience with that and the role you see of eating a healthy plant-based diet in preventing, treating, and even reversing diseases?
Well, you know, I just came across a couple of studies just in the last couple of days. One of them looked at the risk of cancer among vegetarians and vegans at Loma Linda University.
Right.
And the other was cardiovascular disease and mortality. And, you know, you could see, I mean, it used to be that, you know, people did this and, you know, it was kind of a minority view or, you know, people would roll their eyes at people following programs like this.
Right.
But the medical research, the literature is incontrovertible when it comes to the health benefits of following a diet like this, whether it's cancer, whether it's heart disease. I mean, the two of those kill practically half of the Americans who die every year. You know, I think when you look at it, we're going to see that inflammation is much lower following a plant-based diet because the kinds of fats and also the high levels of protein that are present in animal-based diet tend to lead to more pro-inflammatory chemicals in the body, which can cause discomfort in and of themselves, like chronic pain. But most of those chronic diseases have at their root the inflammatory process. So just avoiding those makes a big difference. And now, you know, the epidemiological literature shows that, you know, they see reductions of almost a third in certain types of cancer and in heart disease. For us, I have to say, it's kind of a funny story. My wife, when we first met, we were vegetarians 27 years ago. And I came home one day from work, and we had a young son, and Laura was eating chicken. Uh-huh. And I said, I thought we were vegetarians. We'd both been vegetarians for 10 years. And Laura looked at me and she said, I'm having chicken for dinner. What are you making? And that was kind of the end of that. Fast forward, and a couple of years ago, I came home and Laura says, oh, by the way, we're vegan. She said, actually, I'm vegan. You don't have to be, but you could feel free to make whatever you want for dinner for the rest of your life. And so I thought, okay, I guess I could be vegan. We did this before. Mm-hmm. She had actually been watching on television an interview with Wolf Blitzer interviewing Bill Clinton, President Clinton,
right,
on TV. And I don't know if you've seen any of these interviews.
I have.
But he's downright svelte.
You know?
And this is the person who, you know, would, you know, rarely pass a fast food joint, you know, for most of his life. But he follows a plant-based diet. And, you know, she saw that and thought, wow, you know, if he could do it, then we certainly should. And I have to say that, for people who are considering this, it's really interesting because, you know, there's so many diet approaches out there. And I think if you adhere to them, I think everybody loses weight in the short run.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that, you know, can you sustain it? And, you know, a plant-based or a vegan diet, you know, has certain social and cultural pressures that you have to deal with, whereas, you know, someone on a low-carb, high-protein, Atkins-type diet with a lot of animal products, you know, may find it easier to eat out or to, you know, to find food in that in those parameters. But the difference is that physiologically, your body hates it in a low-carb, high animal product diet. And that once you get on a plant-based diet, You know, you have to get over the psychological issues about not stopping for burgers and fries and things like that. But physiologically, the body feels so good
right.
that you just want to stay on it. And not only does it feel good, but for people who are looking to lower their cholesterol, lower their blood sugar, lower their triglycerides, it only takes about 5 or 6 weeks where you can see dramatic, dramatic changes in a person's, you know, very important lab tests. I know for me, I thought I was in good shape before going on the plant-based diet or switching to a plant-based diet. But, you know, my cholesterol was a little high. And I was aerobically, I was exercising, you know, a tremendous amount. I was, at the time, I was bicycle racing, and I thought I was very fit. But within 5 weeks, my total cholesterol went from 209, which is kind of mediocre, mm-hmm. to 153.
Great.
My LDL went from 119, which, you know, nowadays, especially with all the statins, you know, doctors want everybody to be under 100.
Right.
There aren't many people with LDL under 100. But 5 weeks on a plant-based diet, LDL cholesterol down to 69. And,
wow.
you know, I defy people who are eating, you know, just kind of moderate, omnivorous diet to get anywhere near that.
Well, there's no question that the power of a plant-based diet can be very effective in treating these health conditions and even reversing them, and there's good research to substantiate that, and that's what you in the field of naturopathic medicine recommend is making those healthy lifestyle changes in diet as part of your treatment program, which unfortunately a lot of medical doctors automatically start writing prescriptions for medications to treat these things. But in naturopathic medicine, you're looking at a more holistic or natural approach.
Yeah, and actually, I have I stopped practicing at the end of 2010. But starting in January, I am going to work with our clinic here at the college, at the Southwest College Medical Center, to offer a plant-based nutrition class and a 6-week program. You know, because people, you know, people say, "Oh, I want to lose weight. I want to do this. I want to do that." Mm. But you know, I want to say to people, you know, why just lose weight when you can change your life?
Tell me about where you see the future of naturopathic medicine.
Again, Dr. Westerall, I think the future has to be in treating, preventing, and reversing mm-hmm. chronic diseases. I see the future of naturopathic medicine in three areas. Number one, there's a shortage of primary care providers in the United States. There's simply not enough healthcare practitioners to treat the number of people who need treatment. And so there are a growing number of naturopathic doctors who, you know, really gravitate towards working in medically underserved communities, whether it's urban or in rural communities. We have NDs working on Indian reservations. We have NDs working in inner city. We have NDs working in rural Arizona. And so one area is just in primary care. The second is in the treatment of specific chronic diseases, and I would think about diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. Again, going back to their roots in lifestyle issues. And then the third, I'm particularly excited about the role that naturopathic medicine can play in health promotion, wellness, and prevention. The Affordable Care Act, in addition to signing some workforce development for medically underserved communities, which I referred to a couple of minutes ago, is really the first time that the federal government has spelled out the need for and some specific programs around wellness and health promotion. And so this is an area that I think is particularly important because, you know, everybody focuses on coming up with new treatments or new drugs or new miracle cures for diseases. But, you know, in the long run, it's more cost-effective and it's healthier to just prevent disease in the first place. And so this idea of health promotion, wellness, both on an individual level and in group or corporate settings, I think has a lot of potential, particularly for the naturopathic profession.
For someone that may be listening today and they would like to consult with a naturopathic physician, how would someone find a naturopathic physician in their community?
Probably the best thing to do is to go to the website, naturopathic.org, and that's the website of the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians.
Why don't you spell naturopathic out for them?
N, like nature, naturopathic.org.
And for those that may be thinking of getting into the field of naturopathic medicine and through your college, particularly, how does one get more information?
Well, they can contact Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine on our website, scnm.edu. There's also a website for all of the accredited naturopathic medical schools in North America, and that is aanmc.org.
Well, Dr. Mittman, thank you very much for being with us today, and I wish you and the college the best of success as you advance the science and practice of naturopathic medicine.
Great. Thank you very much, and it's been a pleasure.
Well, we hope you enjoyed our interview today with Dr. Paul Mittman, and if you would like to listen to past interviews and programs of Health and Longevity and get more information about nutrition, health, wellness, longevity, and anti-aging, go to our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's healthandlongevityradio.com. Also, when you go to that website, look for our bookstore, where you can obtain books written by previous guests on the program on a variety of health topics. Get more information at healthandlongevityradio.com.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for this week's program. Please invite your friends to tune in and join us each week here on Health and Longevity. And also listen to past shows on our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. Until next time, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.